Steph Curry is considered to be struggling. He is the greatest shooter man has ever seen. It is not an exaggeration. And when Klay gets back, look the hell out. Golden State is going to be immediately back in championship contention. And by the way, I like that kid Wiseman.
While Stephen A. shouts out the doubters, Steph Curry and the once terrifying Golden State Warriors do have a lot to prove this season. It has been 18 months of just bad luck with serious injuries plaguing the roster. Today, Kevin Arnovitz reports how the Warriors now find themselves at a crucial inflection point and how a fallen dynasty is trying to shoot its way back to the top. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, January 6th. This is ESPN Daily. Kevin Arnovitz, hello.
Hello, Pablo.
I am so excited to talk to you today because you have been digging into the Golden State Warriors and you've talked to their players, their coaches, their executives. But I want to know what other people are curious about when they hear that you're writing a feature on the Warriors. What do they want to know?
Can it still work? Can Steph Curry drag this team by the scruff of its neck into the playoff field? Can they approximate without Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant's gone, even a glimmer of what they were during their dynasty? And that's what people want to know.
And at the center of all of this, Kevin, this week in particular, is Steph Curry. And we can't begin this conversation without talking about what he did specifically on Sunday night. How would you describe what you saw?
It was a volcano.
Curry leans in, one-hander up and good. Just off balance, throws it up, it's good. He's got 50. Curry off the screen, takes a deep three. It's up, it's good! 59 points. Curry takes another three, it's up and good! He hit it with a guy in front of him and a guy behind him. He's got 62.
Just unspeakable three-point attempts that no person with a good conscience should ever attempt. A nation of basketball coaches is freaking out because they're going to have 14-year-olds in practice pulling up from 37 feet. There was this sense coming out of their very meh 2-2 road trip that Steph's showing a few signs. He might, it's going to happen. It may happen. Don't you think it's going to happen? He's starting to move differently. We're starting to find him the ball in places he likes it. And as Draymond Green said to somebody on the staff, all it takes is one. And we saw that one Sunday night against Portland. And essentially he recreated the Steph we knew for those 5 years over the dynasty.
Let's be clear about what the prelude to that career high 62 was, because he was shooting what, like 20% from three in those first two games? So when people are begging, hoping for that volcano to start shaking again, why do you think it actually ended up exploding as it did?
I mean, I think one is just the laws of inevitability. Second is in the Warriors staff, they all emphasize this, and it sounds a little bit like spin if you're sort of cynical, which is, look, he's playing with guys that he's never played with before. But when you really start digging into it and you remember what it was like to watch the Warriors, they don't run scripted sets all that much. All those great, beautiful plays that you see that look like basketball ballet, they use intuition. They use a million reps playing together to sort of know where everybody's going to be almost telepathically on the floor. And so you've seen that a million times. Steph runs, comes off a pick and roll. He gives the ball up. He relocates to the corner. Other people kind of follow him there. Somebody comes off the other side, and then Steph kind of relocates again, and you find him. And it's so second nature if you watched it for five straight years. You come to take it for granted. But if the other guys on the floor aren't versed in the dark arts of Golden State Warriors movement, it's harder. And it was something that I think other teammates, the new guys, Andrew Wiggins, Kelly Oubre, rookie James Wiseman, guys who haven't played as long with him, it takes a little while to get in the rhythm. There was like a moment, I think, in the Milwaukee, their second loss of the season, where you saw Steph come off one of those pick and rolls and he was going to kind of go fast to slow to the right corner and there was somebody there, right? And it wasn't the fault of a teammate. It's just they're not equipped with the intuition and just the nuances of Golden State Warriors basketball, which essentially is, how do we find Steph the right shot at the right moment at the right time, precisely where he wants it?
It's funny to think of people already beginning to sell their stock in Steph because of these early games that you referenced, Kevin, because in the midst of it, in the midst of that slump, we got this video of Steph hitting 105, I believe, consecutive three-pointers in practice. What did you make of that piece of NBA mythology that was actually real, it turned out?
That performance at practice in Chicago, that's right before their third game, is coming off of two games where he's 4-for-20. Now, when you hear a guy like Steph Curry's 4-for-20, the answer is, oh, he's in a slump. But how does a person in a slump hit 105 three-pointers in a row? So it was this sort of clash of realities, which was the performance on the floor wasn't very good. Oh, is his form off or his mechanics off? Is he in his head? And the answer is, well, quite certainly not, because he just hit 105 freaking three-pointers in a row.
Wait, can we stop for a second, Kevin? Because there are people that I saw, again, on the internet, but nonetheless, people who were not impressed by this.
Who are these people, Pablo? Who are these people?
People who say, Kevin, practice is one thing, the game, capital T, capital G, is another, and Steph just doesn't have it in game anymore.
I have no comment. I do not indulge such heresy.
I feel like Steph indulged it more than you just did in reference to all the people who had doubted him. He went Michael Jordan meme on everybody.
Did part of this feel personal for you?
Cue the Jordan meme, right? I take all that personally. It's just an opportunity to kind of assert my will on the game early and try to create some energy.
This 62-point game, Steph pushing back on his critics like that, it all comes right as a lot of people are revising their understanding of who the Warriors maybe really are. So how crucial is this particular moment?
It couldn't have come at a better time, because there's a lot of self-examination going on with the Golden State Warriors. They had these five finals appearances. They won three. They were a dynasty. They are no longer a dynasty by virtue of last year's just sort of lost gap year, people call it. But now, you know, they've got some good players, but they are a team like any other team in the league, right? It used to be the Warriors and everybody else. Now they're searching for identities. They're trying to turn marginal players into good ones. They're trying to get prospects up to speed. They're trying to stave off the aging of some of their players. You know, they're without Klay Thompson. So all of this is in a state of suspension. There's just these questions that Golden State's asking for the first time, which is, how good can we be in this incarnation?
It does feel, Kevin, like they're at this unique inflection point, this state of suspension, as you say. I want to recap for our listeners here just the string of utter horrible luck that landed them here. What happened to this team to bring them so low?
After leading this very charmed existence in the 2019 finals against Toronto, we saw Kevin Durant go down with an Achilles injury, and we saw Klay Thompson go down with an ACL injury. And that pretty much torpedoed their chances in that finals. In the offseason, Kevin Durant departs Golden State for Brooklyn. Then the following year, we're absent much of Klay Thompson, Steph Curry breaks his hand, and that pretty much packs it in. And then just before the season, this November, Klay Thompson, in a workout in Southern California, had his own Achilles injury, and now he is out for the year. He's rehabbing. And Draymond Green, after, you know, having to deal with health protocols, getting back into shape, strained his foot, so he was absent the first four games of the season. So it was very much Steph in the spare parts to start the season, which kind of, I think, might have had their stock price a little artificially low. However, you know, there's still people who believe this is a fringe playoff team. I think the most interesting thing is we don't know. It's been years since we haven't been able to declare the Golden State Warriors top contenders, but we don't know the margin between very good, good, and hey, it's a second gap year.
It does feel, out of all of that, and there's a lot there, that Klay Thompson, like, that's the most gut-wrenching aspect of all of this. I mean, he had worked all the way back, was on the cusp of being Steph's running partner again. NBA fans, let alone Warriors fans, I think NBA fans who appreciate the aesthetic nature of basketball, let alone the substance of what they were doing, we wanted that. And yet this happens. And what kind of a bomb was that, Kevin, for what the Warriors had been planning to do?
It was devastating. You'd look at the top five or six players and you say, this is a team that you rightfully have to put among the contenders. And without Thompson, it just loses its shape. He provides so much structure to the offense. He's a great defender. And so much of the interplay, as you say, between Curry and Thompson, it's the engine that makes them work. Those are the two wheels just flying around the court, confusing defenses and allowing Golden State to perform the surgery they do against defenses.
As you've been speaking to people who work for this team, Kevin, what's your sense of their mindset at this point? How easy, how hard maybe has it been to shake off this kind of a setback, yet another setback, and move on?
I mean, I think they have very measured expectations about this year. This is an intermission. They're on a fact-finding mission. They don't expect, I don't think, to win a championship this year. But what they do expect is to get each of those other pieces acquainted with playing with Steph Curry, because playing with Steph Curry is different. So much of this is pattern recognition.
Mm.
And the only way to master that is to be on the floor with this guy and in soaking up the intuition that he applies to do what he does.
All right, Kevin, after the break, I want to ask you how the Warriors specifically are building that on-court chemistry and how they're making the most of their misfortune.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Kevin, one of the silver linings of all of this past year for the Warriors was the fact that they got the second pick in the draft and they select James Wiseman out of Memphis. And there were all sorts of questions about him because his only college season got cut short after three games. And then because of COVID, there was no summer league. There was this very abbreviated training camp. So how unique has his entrance into the NBA been, and how has he fit in while matriculating with these Warriors through seven games now?
I think Steve Kerr said it the other day in conversation, which is, this is completely unprecedented. There is no way there's ever been a player coming into the league with this little prep time going into opening night, right? Most rookies, there is this orientation process, right? You go to summer league, you get the kind of feel and the rhythm of the NBA game. Those are important games. You get a full training camp. By the way, you get the camaraderie that comes with training camp. You get to go on a fishing boat with Paul George or whatever the hell they do
yes.
in Golden State, right? Like you do all that. And instead, he's coming into this very atomized league. He has three games of college experience, but he's also kind of special. You know, I asked Bob Myers, the general manager, you know, why he selected Wiseman. One of the reasons I asked that is centers are kind of out of fashion in the league. There mm-hmm. are a lot of organizations, you can't imagine drafting a center because I think it's become a bit of a mercenary position. You can always go out and get one on the cheap. You know, why get a guy that so often, given the modern game, isn't even going to be on the floor during crucial minutes? And I thought Golden State, frankly, was one of those organizations. And he said, just this is somebody, there's nothing you can say he won't be able to do. Can he do everything right now? No. But when you start ticking off things you want from a center in the modern NBA, can he shoot? Can he protect the rim? Can he switch out and guard small guys on pick and rolls? Can he run the floor? Can he pass? He has the capacity to do all those things. And what impressed Bob Myers was at their only dinner last October or November, Wiseman showed up alone. And I asked Myers, is that unusual? He says, absolutely. generally speaking, when a 19-year-old comes to meet the coach and the owner and the general manager, you know, there'll be some sort of handler or maybe a member of the family or a coach or something. And Weissman just kind of walks in like he's meeting, you know, three middle-aged guys for dinner, and because he's one of them, and just composes himself. Weissman's fascinating. He speaks Mandarin
How does that happen?
I think, you know, so Weissman sees it as, look, I mean, if you're going to be an NBA player, you're a citizen of the world. A lot of guys talk meditation. It's kind of fashionable to say you do meditation. You know, I kind of drilled him. He knows this stuff. Mm. It's for real.
Wait, hold on. I want to understand how Kevin Arnovitz drills James Weissman about meditation. What are you asking him? Because this is a fact-checking that I actually maybe am most interested in.
The reason I started asking about it is he was talking about the state of being on the floor as a guy who's never been on an NBA floor. And when he got about four or five sentences in, I said, you know, James, it sounds like you're talking about meditation. And he sort of said, well, I am. Mm. And sort of he doesn't distinguish between the state of being in a live possession and the state of meditation. He's both observing the game as a state of consciousness, but he's also able to react. He might not be great at it yet, but he kind of knows what the plan is.
How does Steve Kerr interact with James Weissman? What's his read of his rookie?
There was a very funny moment in the first game of the season at halftime in Brooklyn. Typically, the players go into the locker room, the coaches go into this little coach's anteroom to kind of discuss some stuff. And as the coaches are gathering, James Weissman pokes his head in, which is unheard of. Players just don't go in the coach's room at halftime. This is a league of codes. And he said, hey, Coach Kerr, is there anything I can be doing better? And Kerr just says to him, no, keep doing exactly what you're doing. And when Weissman leaves, the entire staff had a good laugh because, you know, who does that? And they didn't mean it in ridicule. Their general reaction is, how lucky are we to coach this guy? Draymond Green, he's sort of taken Weissman under his wing to kind of teach him the dark arts of being a big man in the NBA. And, you know, that includes knowing how to screen, exactly how to screen, what kind of screen to set in various situations in various locations. It's kind of it's a buddy movie I want to see on screen, but Draymond Green is a basketball genius. For all of his failings, temperamentally and otherwise, he is a guy that even his critics will allow for the fact that he is as smart as any player in the league. And it's been really fun to watch Draymond, especially when he was on the bench, not playing and active because of the injury, just be the horse whisperer. And just be the guy who's in Weissman's ear.
The other aspect of this that's so fun is that James Weissman, as you say and as you write, is this alien sort of a talent. He has every physical skill. That's not what Draymond's strengths are. He is not that sort of a prototypical athlete, right?
Right. And that, I think that's one of the reasons Draymond is so fascinated with him. I mean, Draymond is the anti-Weissman, right? He's this 6'6 guy. No inherent athleticism. That's not how he made his bones in the league. He does it through guile and wit and vision. And, you know, Weissman has every athletic gift. And even hearing Draymond talk about it, he doesn't do it with a trace of jealousy, but listening to him enumerate the guy's physical gifts, what he's essentially saying is, if I had that body, there would be the greatest basketball player ever lived. And I think Draymond might be right. You know, Draymond said something very interesting. He was talking about this very basic precept that the NBA has called 2.9. What it means is you can only not guard a guy for 2.9 seconds. In 3 seconds, if you're not guarding a specific player on the floor, you get whistled for illegal defense. Pieces have been written about 2.9. It is part of the nomenclature of the NBA, and everybody knows what it means. Everybody except James Weissman. And Draymond Green discovered this, and he was just bowled over. And he understood why. I mean, again, no training camp. You're not hanging out with each other. And he said, you know, it just goes to show how clueless this guy is. And he said clueless in a positive way. Because his point was, if you're that clueless and you can go out and score 19 and collect 6 rebounds in your first game and then go do it again in the second game and you play impactful basketball and you don't have an effing clue, to use Draymond's words, that's how special he is.
It is wild to think about, Kevin, how the Warriors were the dominant like TV characters in the NBA for so long. They got enormous ratings, but they are aging now. Steph is 32, Klay and Draymond are 30, and that's like young by earthly standards, certainly, but by NBA standards, it's a separate proposition. So how loudly do you think do they hear that clock ticking?
I think they're aware of it. I mean, I think they're also optimistic. I think they know what a lot of people in the NBA knows, what age takes away, experience and wisdom can compensate for. And they have a ton of that. And I think if you saw Sunday night's game, there's also a notion that Steph's jump shot might be very portable through time. It has a pretty long shelf life, and there's confidence that he'll age pretty gracefully given that particular skill. But in the meantime, they're sort of learning how to be mortal in this league after being transcendent for so long. They have that what they call championship DNA, and they know what it looks like when you do it. But I think in terms of reassembling it, you know, they're kind of like a lot of other teams now. They're in the scrum. And I think learning how to be in the scrum is going to be a fun experiment for them. And actually, I think they're in some ways having a really good time doing it. You know, something you hear from the Warriors a lot is winning those championships was exhausting. And that there's a certain pleasure in the workaday tasks of building something back up in renovation. The question becomes, okay, how good can this team be in its second act? I actually think their trajectory in the next 3 to 4 years is as interesting as any team's in the league.
Kevin Arnovitz, thank you for meditating on NBA mortality with us on ESPN Daily.
It was mindful and lovely.
Kevin's article titled "The Golden State Warriors Are Learning How to Be Mortal" is now available on ESPN Plus. Up next, the Cowboys didn't make the playoffs this year, but Dallas did accomplish a noteworthy and troubling milestone.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here's another story I want you to know. The Dallas Cowboys went a depressing 6-10 this year, missing the playoffs, which is bad news for one Jerry Jones. Since 1989, Jones has not only been the team's owner, he's also been its president and its general manager. But yesterday, in the middle of a radio appearance on 105.3 The Fan, Jerry Jones wanted to make sure that America heard the good news about the franchise he micromanages and the example that his Cowboys set
for you. But our stadium is a great example. You know, I think we set, and I'm going to arm wave, but I think we set the world record for attendance for a venue this year at our stadium in the world of pandemic.
To be perfectly clear here, the Dallas Cowboys hosted more than 219,000 people over their 8 games at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. They blew away all other American teams in attendance all year, even increasing as the NFL season pushed on, averaging more than 30,000 over their last 4 home games. For context, I just looked up the average attendance at a normal Major League Baseball game back in 2019. It was less than 28,000. Now, in fairness to Jerry, he very quickly attempted to provide a key caveat to that boast.
And we did it extremely, the results were extremely safe.
But the problem is that we can't actually know that. Not for sure. Not as the world of pandemic continues to spin wildly out of control. And not as America continually fails to respect how easily COVID-19 is winning its war against us. Back in November, in fact, Arlington's county health officials reported that at least 8 residents had attended games at AT&T Stadium before testing positive. And just yesterday, on the same day, Jones was bragging about attendance. The total number of COVID cases in his state of Texas hit 1.84 million and 21 million nationally. All of which is to say that the Cowboys are not the great example that Jerry Jones would like all of us to think they are. Not in the world of pandemic, but they do feel like America's team. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.